moody, introspective film Drive My Car is one of the best-reviewed films of the last year. It's already racked up a number of critics' awards, and it's Japan's entry for this year's Best International Feature Oscar.
And we love this movie. It's about a widowed theater director who's staging a production of Chekhov's play Uncle Vanya. Meanwhile, the director grows closer and closer to the young woman hired to drive him to and from rehearsals. It's nearly 3 hours long, but don't hold that against it. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about Drive My Car on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me and Aisha today is writer Kat Chow. Hey, Kat.
Hey.
And also joining us is Lenica Cruz, a senior editor covering culture at The Atlantic. Welcome back, Lenica.
Hi there.
In Drive My Car, Hidetoshi Nishijima plays Yusuke Kafuku, a successful actor and theater director. When his wife dies suddenly, he realizes he didn't know her as well as he thought he did. 2 years later, a theater festival in Hiroshima commissions him to direct a multilingual production of Uncle Vanya. Kafuku loves to drive his red Saab, but the festival forces him to accept a driver, an impassive young woman named Misaki, played by Toko Miura. The film is based on a short story by Haruki Murakami and was directed by Ryusuke Hamaguchi, who also directed the recent movie Wheel of Fortune and Fantasy. Kat, what'd you make of Drive My Car?
Oh my gosh. First of all, I've been so excited to talk to you guys about this movie because there's just so much of it. It's 3 hours long and it's absolutely beautiful. I think it's the best advertisement for a red Saab I've seen in a long time. And there's something so stark and gorgeous about the acting. It's very subdued. And I think that really lends itself to the topic of grief and loss and everything in between and just the unspoken feelings that everything evokes in this film.
Definitely. And I'm really glad we're talking about this film, too, because there is such ambiguity baked in. There is so much to unpack.
Yeah.
Lenica, what'd you make of this film?
I also thought it was fantastic. I feel like it was one of those movies where early on you realize you'll have to just give yourself over to, but that gives you so much more than you expected in return. And like you both said, it's about so much. It's about how humans understand and misunderstand one another, how little we can know about the people we're closest to, how grief forces us to change, but also freezes us in time. And I feel like Hamaguchi juggles so many different tones over the course of 3 hours. There's languid romance, creepy thriller at times, domestic drama, road movie, buddy film, tragedy, and I couldn't stop thinking about it in the days after I watched it.
Well, there you go. How about you, Aisha?
Well, I am on the record as thinking that most movies these days are too long, and they could all benefit from being under 2 hours. And this is a movie that takes my theory and just plunges it into the earth and says, look at me, I deserve to be 3 hours long, and it absolutely does deserve to be 3 hours long. I really loved this. And I think for me, one of the things that I love the most about it is the way in which, even though it is about grief and loss, it's also very much about love and how love is not what we expect it to be or does not manifest itself in the ways that we expect it to be. And to see the way in which the Kafuku character relates to his wife and what he knew about her and what he may or may not have known about her. I think that's kind of where the ambiguity comes in. But the way he relates to her is so deeply felt and so deeply probed and questioned. And I just really appreciate the way in which the movie takes its time to really build into that and slowly peel back the layers. Hamaguchi, in interviews, the director, he's talked about how while the original short story uses a lot of flashback. In this case, he decided not to. It's a linear story. And so we are learning things in the order that they happen. And I think that's so to its benefit. I do think in general, flashbacks are very much overused in TV and film today. And I think that the way in which we learn these things as they go along, it propels the story and really works with the motif of like driving and going forward in many ways. And so, yeah, big fan of this movie.
I'm so glad you said that thing about how it earns its running time, because this film managed to sneak up on me. And I was like, how can this 3-hour film sneak up on me? But I mean that emotionally, because in the beginning, the main character reacts so impassively to walking in on his wife having sex with another man. We can tell we're in Murakami's world and also Hamaguchi's world, where characters can seem inscrutable, forcing us to guess at their motivations. And yes, it's true that both he and his wife are grieving the loss of a child, so that tracks. But There was a recent film by Lee Chang-dong called Burning, which came out a few years back.
Love that one.
It was also based on a Murakami short story that had what I think are more of his kind of hallmarks. It was mysterious, it had dream logic, and a much stronger crime thriller plot. And this has some pulpy elements, as you mentioned, Lenica, but it's dialed way, 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 way back in favor of these characters' psychology. So in that sense, there is a climactic scene in this film. It takes place on a hillside outside a village. And when this scene started, I thought to myself, boy, this scene needs to do so much. So much needs to happen in that moment to kind of tie these characters up. And there's no way any of it could feel earned if we hadn't spent nearly 3 hours getting to know them and how broken they are.
Yeah, I loved what you were saying about this unknowability and also the inscrutable nature of a lot of these characters. Going in, watching this, I was a little bit questioning because I think anything with Murakami, well, you know, I did enjoy, you know, many years ago when I read the Wind-Up Bird Chronicle in Norwegian Wood, I think Murakami, rightfully so, has earned a reputation for, in many ways, not portraying women, particularly with depth. And, you know, I was reading recently an interview that he did with another Japanese author, Miyako Kawakami, who is the author of Breasts and Eggs, which is one of my favorite novels. And she really presses him on his portrayal of women in his books. And, you know, she uses the phrase, women in his work tend to be pragmatic functions, almost mythological. And so I think going into this and also, you know, the first 20 minutes or 30 minutes or so of the film, seeing the ways in which Odo, the main character's wife, you don't really get her story. I was concerned and it really ticked up my spidey senses. But of course, it evolved so much more, in part, I think, because Hamaguchi really takes other pieces of Murakami's work and really weaves it into the film. So in the adaptation, it's not just Drive My Car, but other elements from the short story collection where Drive My Car comes from. And I think that helps quite a bit to flesh out and bring to life these characters.
It's interesting that you say that, Kat, because I think we both, as readers of Murakami, had similar reservations, or at least we went in with a little bit of skepticism about how the film would treat the wife character. And it's funny, I actually felt like the film did so much within the first 40 minutes or so before she died to establish her as not a villain, as not some kind of seductress, but to make her feel like just a real human, and to really explain why Kafuku had such a strong relationship to her and why her death had such a deep impact on him. I think it's so important that it did that setup in the first 40 minutes because, like you said, Aisha, there was no flashback sort of element to this film. And so everything hinges on the impact that she made on you in the first chunk of the movie. And in contrast to the short story, which I don't know if any of you have read except for Kat, but it feels like so much more of the short story is about Kafuku questioning why she cheated on him. And it feels like the film itself is about so much more than that, just about the fact of her fidelity or infidelity. And it's about the way also that her loss may have informed the way that she connects to sex and connects to storytelling and creation. But in this film, it feels like you learn so much more about Kafuku's wife and the way that maybe she found another way to create and to bring life after this loss that they shared together.
That's such a tricky thing to pull off, right? Because in a way, she is supposed to be this sort of mystery, or at least for the viewer, this mystery that we need to figure out. But at the same time, like you said, Lenica, we get so much from her in those first 40 minutes. And then later on in a scene between Kafuku and another character where they are discussing her, like there's a way in which that scene could play out as like, oh, these two men explaining, explaining this woman that they both knew at one point. And the scene is in a car and it's a very long scene, just back and forth.
It's gorgeous.
But
beautiful.
It works so well. Like they have this moment where they are really kind of sussing each other out and also figuring out what their relationship was to her. And it doesn't at all, to me at least, it didn't feel weird or creepy or mansplaining in any way. It just felt like these were two people sort of lamenting or bonding over this relationship. And that scene made her feel even more alive in ways that I was not expecting to feel after we've left her behind well, we never really leave her behind, but after she's physically not present in the story anymore, I wasn't expecting to feel that way, and it really resonated so well for me with that scene.
Yeah, Murakami is known, at least in his fiction, for, you know, abstractions. Like, he works in the abstract, he works in the borderline absurd. Here, there's a lot that's abstract, but it's all on the emotional level. I mean, this director isn't showy. He's not throwing bells and whistles at you to direct your attention, or when stuff like that doesn't work, it distracts your attention. It's not an affectless tone, but it is a steady tone that kind of reflects. So much of this movie is about the production of Uncle Vanya and how Kufuku directs his actors as they're going through the rehearsal process. And he refuses, the character of Kufuku refuses to give his actors the kind of overt direction that they're probably expecting. He is just insisting that they read the text of the play again and again and again. And I'm reading right now Isaac Butler's book, The Method, which is about the acting style that Stanislavski created as he was directing Chekhov's plays and the plays of other playwrights. And the approach he's taking here certainly tracks, concentrating on the text to eliminate the performance. But I have a kind of 11th grade English question for you guys, because I couldn't quite pin down the connection between Uncle Vanya and the themes of this movie, because Uncle Vanya is about the frustrations of these very bored, long-suffering characters at this provincial estate who are toiling in obscurity for these rich jerks. And in the end, all these people can do is keep their head down, continue to work and strive and await their rewards in the afterlife. So it's about bougie despair, which is one reason that it holds its power. But Hamaguchi is not drawing stark parallels here, right? He's letting them bubble up. And I'm just trying to figure how these two things, the play and the movie's themes, kind of talk to each other.
I have two responses, hopefully without giving too much away about the ending. I think that really clarified the connection to the production of Uncle Vanya. Mm-hmm. I'm not too familiar with Uncle Vanya as, you know, a story or a play, besides having just read a bunch of plot summaries. But so one thing that's really interesting about Kofuku's production is that everybody speaks or interacts in a different language. So I think the production and the style of Kofuku, too, and what he was trying to do with language was absolutely gorgeous. And it spoke to how I really see loss and grief, where we navigate grief and really memory and regret in this way that can be like trying to have a conversation with someone who's speaking a language we don't exactly know. And so we're trying to probe their body language, or we're trying to suss out the meaning and the emotion of what they're saying, the tenor of the voice, when we don't really know exactly what that precise translation is, but we sort of have this feeling. And so it strikes me, you know, even if that translation isn't exactly right, it strikes me that in this way, this really connected to the story itself, where Kafuku is trying to remember the image of his wife and trying to engage with it through all of these other characters. And it's sometimes opaque, sometimes obscure, but ultimately the feeling is still there.
I love, Kat, that you used like a navigation metaphor to talk about how Kafuku is processing the loss of his wife, because, I mean, coming back to the fact that the film is called Drive My Car, and so much of the film takes place in this contained space, where a big part of the movie is how Kofuku, one of the ways that he learns his lines is he listens to a recording in his car as he's driving to and from work. And the last tape that his wife gives to him, where she reads half of the lines for him to respond to, is Uncle Vanya. And every day he goes in his car as he's driving, he basically has a conversation with his dead wife.
こんなの地獄よ。もう耐えられない。
僕だって才能もあれば頭もある。
It's so sad, and it's in some ways he's like rehearsing his own grief, and it becomes something that's automatic to him. But when he starts directing this festival, he's forced to sort of cede that driver spot to another person, even though he's retaining that sort of agency in the context of the play, where he's continuing to direct it and he's continuing to tell people how to engage with the text. And in this case, he is a passenger and in some ways learning how to make way for other people and to make way for other people's stories and to listen to Misaki, who's such a quiet character, and her silence is a big part of what he values in her, I think, in the short story when you read it. But so much of their relationship is about this dialogue that they create and moving from repeating familiar words to maybe engaging with a new script I guess, not to take the metaphor too far.
No, I love that. I really love that. You're right. The moments of him speaking to his dead wife on tape are just so small and quiet and beautiful.
I don't know if it's worth mentioning, but A.O. Scott did do a piece in the New York Times sort of dissecting the connection between Uncle Vanya. And actually, much of what he said echoes what you said, Kat, which is that there is no real one-to-one, but it is about the fact that these characters in Uncle Vanya decide to persevere. That is sort of where this movie is moving toward, is that you've got to keep going and persevere, even when you have regrets, when you have this feeling of not having done enough or wishing you could change things in the past. It's about moving forward. And that is in many ways what Uncle Vanya is about. But I do find it interesting that at least when the movie started for me, I was a little confused as to what time period we were in just because of the car. It looked straight out of, you know, late 80s, early 90s. So I was like, wait, is this, are we in the past? But then there's email. And so I was like, no, that can't be. And so I don't know if that's at all connected, but it does seem like so much of this is about past and how far, how close we are to the past, whether it's emotionally or actually when we're talking about the concept of time. And I just think it's an interesting sort of another layer of motif and theme that is happening both visually and emotionally in the script.
Well, as you might be able to glean from context clues, we all kind of really dig this movie. Tell us what you think about Drive My Car. We hope you see it. We hope you like it. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. And we will see you all tomorrow.